Howdy, my name is Kate Harrell. I am a master's student at Texas A&M University in the Department of Entomology under Dr. Sword, and I'll be talking about the efficacy of neonicotinoid seed treatments on thrips and cotton. All right, so in 2012, over 2 million acres of cotton were infested by thrips, and about half of those acres were treated with an insecticide. Thrips are an early season sucking pest, and this cotton plant right here exhibits some symptoms of thrips damage. Note it's curling, curling under of the leaves, and they're misshapen, and this plant damage can lead to delayed maturity, which can increase the risk of exposure to detrimental environmental effects like inclement weather and late season pests, which can all lead to yield reduction. All right, in the past, Aldicarb or Timic was used to control thrips. Aldicarb was an in-furrow application insecticide that provided early season protection against insects. It was removed from the market in 2011 because of concern about its impact on the environment. Neonicotinoid seed treatments have largely taken the place of Timic in the market. Some advantages of the neonicotinoid seed treatments are that they are systemic, provide a broad spectrum of control on early season sucking pests, and as a seed treatment, they are considered a low application rate. They have residual activity for about 3 weeks, and the currently commercially available neonicotinoid seed treatments for cotton are imidacloprid and thimethoxam. All right, so our hypothesis was that the available neonicotinoid seed treatments would be a viable replacement for Aldicarb, and that the efficacy of neonicotinoid seed treatments varies with different thrip species. To test this, we decided to evaluate the efficacy of neonicotinoid seed treatments for thrips in Texas cotton in field and greenhouse trials, and to conduct a species survey of thrips across Texas. All right, for our greenhouse, we had a trial with 6 cotton plants per treatment per tray, and there were 4 replications for each 4 sampling dates, which took place at 7-day intervals after emergence. The seedlings were mass infested by wheat that we grew in the greenhouse prior to planting the cotton. I counted the thrips using the thrips washing method developed by Burris in 1989. All right, before we go into the results, I'd like to show you a picture of this is the wheat that we planted in the greenhouse prior to putting cotton in there, and that's what the thrips grew on prior to getting into the cotton. And the quart-sized mason jars you see here are the ones that we use to sample in our greenhouse and in our field trials. Okay, on to the results. In the greenhouse, we didn't see a difference between the treatments at any of the time intervals, but we did note an increase of the thrips populations across the first 3 weeks. At about the third true leaf stage, you'll notice that there are about 42 thrips on each plant, and that's quite a few per leaf per plant, sorry. All right, moving into the field trials, we used the same cotton variety as we did in the greenhouse. This variety was Fibermax 1944, which was selected because it's adapted to perform well at all of our locations, and it has some nematode resistance, which is necessary for one of our locations. We had 6 locations across the state with 4 row by 50 feet plots with 4 replications. We sampled field trials by pulling 10 random plants in a plot and then putting them in the mason jars that I showed earlier and counting thrips using Burris's thrips washing method, which tends to collect more thrips than some of the other field sampling methods. All right, our field locations, we had 6 of them. The top one is Cress, and then Halfway, Lamesa, Wall, Chillicothe, and College Station. I'm going to start with our farthest north location, Cress. All right. In Cress, the untreated control had over 20 thrips per plant at the first true leaf stage, while the treated plants had about 20 thrips total on all 10 of them. The second sampling date followed cool and wet weather and had no difference in thrips numbers between the treatments. This location, I'd also like to note that it was replanted to sorghum shortly after our second sampling date due to a poor stand following adverse weather conditions. So, I mean, the cotton was in pretty poor conditions. That can give you an idea of why thrips numbers were so low there. All right, moving on to Halfway. There were differences between the treatments in the control and the treatments in the first two sampling dates, by the third sampling date, the thrips populations had decreased. The first two dates, we had about 1.3 thrips per plant. I'm going to move on into yield per acre and halfway. We didn't see a difference between the treatments, but I'd also like to note that we didn't reach threshold during the season. Okay, into College Station, this is our farthest south location, and we did have a difference between the control and the two treatments at the first sampling date, but the populations had declined by our second sampling date, following pretty heavy rainfall in that area. Okay, so the yield breaker, this is the approximate gen weight for the College Station, and we can see a difference between imidacloprid and the control, but not with thiamethoxam. All right, thrip sampling for the other three locations, this was Wall, La Mesa, and Chillicothe. We didn't see a difference between the treatments, but as you notice, we also didn't see very many thrips in any of these locations. The most we saw for a set of 10 plants was 28, and that's pretty low thrips population. In conclusion, we can note that the seed treatments reduced populations in Cress, Halfway, and College Station, so about half of our field trials. The efficacy of these treatments decreased over time, which is kind of what we expected. Only one of our locations, College Station, even had a high enough thrips population anytime during the season that it would be considered at threshold, so we would have even considered treating for thrips. In College Station, the imidacloprid out-yielded the control, and in the greenhouse, we didn't see any treatment effects, and that's most likely due to some methodological errors we had in soil selection. Moving forward, I plan to repeat the greenhouse bioassays with field soil to remedy some of the issues that we ran into with using potting soil for thinking that the insecticide was running out the bottom, and that's one of the reasons we weren't seeing any effects. I also plan to check the neonicotinoid concentrations in the leaf tissues and soil from all of the locations and in the greenhouse, and we're going to repeat the field trials and conduct a species survey for each of the locations. I'd like to thank the Plains Cotton Growers Association, Texas A&M AgriLife Extension, and Cotton Incorporated for our funding, and I'd also like to thank all of these folks listed here for helping with our research. We had IPM agents and county agents and ag agents helping us all across Texas with these trials. Are there any questions? We did take biomass ratings and leaf area and height in the greenhouse, but we didn't take any of that in the field. I have nodes above white flower data, but I don't have that with me right now. Yes, sir? I'm sorry, what was the question again? This was 1 year's worth of data. We're going to do another year next year, though.
Approximately how mature was your cotton typically your last sampling date? I saw the dates seem to be long after the plant.
Yes, sir. So for the most part, four leaves was the latest that we got. The weather was really kind of squirrely this year, and it was cool, so a lot of our cotton was really delayed. Yes, sir.
Any other questions for Lauren?